Unemployment insurance provides a safety net for workers who lose their jobs. What happens, though, when there's no money left in the state fund from which jobless claims are paid? Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, an expert panel will look at ways to cover a shortfall that's approaching $2 billion. So how did Indiana's Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund end up so far in the red? What happened to the supposed fix that lawmakers came up with 2 years ago? And who should bear the brunt of any solution going forward? The employers who pay taxes or the unemployed workers who receive benefits? All that and more on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue Research Park. Four locations, 200 companies, 4,000 jobs. Purdue Research Park. The idea economy is here.
Indiana's unemployment insurance system is broke, and some would argue broken. Simply put, the payroll taxes the state collects from employers aren't sufficient to offset the benefits paid out to jobless workers, and they haven't been for some time. The state has kept benefits flowing by borrowing from the federal government, close to $2 billion so far. In 2009, lawmakers passed a controversial plan to put the state's insurance fund back on a path to solvency. Implementation was delayed, but even if those changes had taken effect as planned, a gap between premiums and benefits would remain. So when and how will Indiana resolve the crisis once and for all? Here to discuss the issue are Republican Representative Dan Leonard of Huntington, the author of a proposed fix that on Monday passed the House 61-38. Representative David Nizgotsky of South Bend, the ranking Democrat on the House Employment, Labor, and Pensions Committee. Kevin Brenniger, president of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. And Nancy Guyot, president of the Indiana State AFL-CIO. And I thank you all for being here for this discussion.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, John.
Let's roll back the clock and start at the beginning, as they would say. 10 years ago, back in 2000, the fund had a surplus of $1.6 billion. Easy to say, that was not destined to remain that way, certainly, but what's your take, Representative Leonard, on how we got from $1.6 billion surplus to $2 billion deficit?
Well, I think lawmakers looked at the $1.6 billion sitting there in the fund and simply thought, let's get that back out into the economy. And right or wrong, I think it was probably, at the time, was probably a good move because the economy was good, unemployment was low, we had very little need to have that $1.6 billion just sitting in the bank. Why not put it back into the economy and help the economy grow even more? And so in order to do that, lawmakers decided to increase benefits and reduce premiums for businesses. And in over a 10-year period, the benefits continued to go up, premiums continued to go down a little bit, and over that 10-year period, we ended up $2 billion in the hole. Crossed over about 2005 was the point when we started taking in less than we were paying out in the fund, and it continued to grow over that time until 2008 was towards the end of 2008 is when we started to borrow from the federal government and have continued to borrow just to pay benefits to unemployed Hoosiers.
And here we are today.
Here we are.
David Nizgotsky, not to dwell on the past, but is this one of those where lawmakers would like to have a mulligan in terms of what they did earlier in the decade?
Oh, I would certainly think so. 2001, I won't agree or disagree. It was what the legislature chose to do, and they did it for the right reasons. I don't have any qualms with that. I mean, we were in a recession, and we were trying to help people. The same things we're trying to find a way to do today. The thing is, though, and whether I was a part of legislature then or now, I do look at myself as I'm part of it, and I believe as we moved forward that there was absolutely a mistake not revisiting it at that time. Maybe we couldn't have foresaw what we're in right now, but I think we could have done a lot of good, and I think that's what we should have done. You can't change that now, But for years, even prior to 2001 or 2000, that fund had begun exhibiting signs that this type of thing was going to take place at some time. And as we all know, the number one cure is jobs, and that's what our focus should be. But there's a lot of other things we've got to try to work with to bring this around.
And again, as you both have noted, the benefits and the premiums sort of crossed paths around the middle of the decade, even before the recession hit and unemployment spiked, which of course put even a greater burden on the fund. Kevin Brenninger, why wasn't there more of a hue and cry for something to be done earlier than it was?
Well, we need to recall that the surplus was built up during the longest post-World War II economic expansion in this country's history. So it was unique circumstances that got to that point. There was a conscious decision to draw the fund. Now, we had legislation every year to go raid the fund for other purposes, and I think business and I think labor as well wanted that fund maintained for its intended purpose. Taxes on businesses were only rolled back for 1 year. The biggest thing that happened over that period of time were benefits were increased, and they were increased to among the highest in the country. What we ended up with was a perfect storm, where yes, the lines crossed about mid-decade. There were several years where we knew that the fund was being drawn down and that before long we were going to have to do something about that. And then boom, the Great Recession of 2009 and 2010 hit, and it was kind of the perfect storm where we were already on a path of the fund balance dwindling, and then we really got socked by the recession, caught not having made adjustments. But even if we had made those adjustments, we were only about $200 million out of balance going into the recession. We would have still been in a very difficult situation that we're in today, and it's just a function of severe economic times.
Nancy Guyot, the notion that the benefits were among the most generous in the nation, you buy that was that set the stage, what contributed to the perfect storm along with the economy?
No, in fact, I'd quarrel with that concept. The average benefit in Indiana is $283. That is ranks us 31st in the nation. In fact, the system was designed to work on a 2.7% tax of total wages. Employers have been paying in about 0.61 or 77% less than the original design, both as a result of legislative action and inaction over the period of the fund's history. We think that's a much greater contributor. We rank at the bottom in taxes paid. We rank about 31st in average benefit.
But most Hoosiers don't receive the average benefit. They receive a benefit higher than that, and our top-level benefit is near the top of the Rankin states.
And the top benefit is $390 a week. That mm-hmm. would be the maximum at this point.
But yeah, and I think benefit is also below the federal poverty line. So, I mean, there are obviously a lot of different ways you can look at the numbers, but the realism is we are 31st in the country. We're lower than average, and we will go with this proposed benefit cut to 44th in the country.
And I want to get to House Bill 1450. Certainly that's what you're all sitting here and champing at the bit to talk about. I just want to set the stage a little bit more as we move chronologically. Yes. 2 years ago, David Nisgotsky, when you were in the majority in the House, chairing the committee and spearheading the plan that was cobbled together at that point, and then, of course, ultimately delayed the implementation, which would have been an increased premiums for most, not all businesses, but most businesses. You stand by that plan? Would that have been the way to go?
That was a very difficult plan to come by. We worked with everyone involved, all the business interests, small business, large business, you name it, across the spectrum. We had to make difficult decisions based upon what decisions weren't made in the prior 10 years. All through history, since 1935 when this was designed, it was never ever put on the backs of the unemployed. It was there so those dollars that were raised through this fund and went through unemployment benefits, their real goal was to go back into the communities, flow through the pockets of the unemployed into the communities, and also sustain those communities during times of recession or depression. And it was a very difficult plan to enact, but the thing of what it was fair. That's what we heard from everyone. Just make it fair. Don't go back. Don't try to retrieve monies. You say, well, this business should owe this from the past, and that's what we did. So there were over 40,000 businesses that rarely laid people off. They actually were going to see a tax decrease, and then it was on a changing scale for the businesses that used layoffs and laid off a lot of workers in bad times. Those rates would have been more. What this plan here does, and that's the problem with it, it equalizes it across. It for the next 10 years, it says all businesses will pay upon a certain scale level. So that is why we thoroughly believe that you're taking a shift of a huge hundreds of million dollars from large businesses. Some small businesses, too. There's some small businesses that lay off a lot of workers. The point is that you're shifting those dollars onto the backs of small businesses, and then also making this the largest benefit decrease in the history of Indiana.
You keep wanting to talk about the new plan, and I promise you, we're going to get there before this 20 minutes or so is up.
But it was a good plan. The Senate signed it. It was almost unanimous, and the governor signed it. It's actually law right now.
But it was delayed, the implementation, and would take effect unless something else is done later this year. Does anybody think that the delay, which ostensibly was because of the recession and the inability of...
It actually took effect in January of this year.
Or take effect in January of this year. But the bills, I mean, people have not necessarily paid...
On a quarterly
bills
paid
are, the bills are out, and people are planning to pay those now. They're due. They're not due yet, but they're due the end of the first quarter.
And hence the haste with which
you're
moving. Does anyone think that the delay was a bad idea from last year? No.
I would say that I probably felt irresponsible in doing it, but at the same time, at that point, I could not have on my shoulders shutting down a number of businesses also. So the desire was trying to go forward. All of us hoped that the federal government would help in a little bit more of a measure, but I don't think we're going to see that at all. So it is squarely on our backs at this point.
All right. The stage has been set now, then, for, you've heard this, the bills are out. Businesses are saying, am I going to pay the increased amounts or not? So hence the bill you introduced, Representative Leonard, 1450, which moved out of the House 8-5 on a party-line vote, moved out of the Senate on a largely party-line vote. One Democrat joined the majority on that vote. Briefly, what would the plan do?
Well, first of all, let me say that 1379 was not a bipartisan issue. You can talk about the Senate passing it, but I was on that conference committee, and I was removed from the conference committee because I wouldn't sign the bill. I was not included in any of the conference committee meetings because I was barred out as a Republican, and that's not the way the system is supposed to work. There's supposed to be Republicans and Democrats in the House and Republicans and Democrats in the Senate on that conference committee. Not only myself, but Senator Talian in the Senate was barred out of those meetings. It was not an agreed upon solution to the problem. It addressed one thing and one thing only. It addressed increases in premiums on businesses. It's the exact reason that it was put off last year on a bipartisan effort and a bipartisan vote, because we knew it was going to kill business in Indiana. 1450.
And that's exactly why we strongly opposed 1379 when it first passed.
And sought the delay in implementation.
Absolutely.
See, when I was trying to talk about the past, you guys wanted to talk about the future. Now I'm trying to talk about the future.
Well,
you want to talk about the past.
It kind of leads into the present.
All right, now take us to the present. All right.
1450, in essence, reverses what we did in 2000. It took us, to get here today, it took us 10 years. And we're not going to get out of it overnight. We're not going to get out of it in a year or 2 years, because we're talking about $2 billion. And 1450, in essence, reverses what we did in 2000. There are some benefit adjustments. There's some eligibility adjustments. And if you calculate those, about one-fourth of the responsibility of paying off that $2 billion comes from eligibility and benefits. And about three-quarters of the responsibility is on the backs of business. Businesses are going to go at the high rate from last year are going to go from paying $392 an employee to $703
per employee.
That's not an insignificant
increase. Under the plan
Insignificant increase in premiums to those businesses. But it is a reduction from $1,379, which would take them to eventually to $969.
So Representative Mizgatsky, what's wrong with the plan? If three-fourths of it is on the backs of
businesses? By businesses?
Well, it depends on how those proportions are and how they impact that business or that individual. And you're correct. What you've done is gone back and reversed those trends, but a great deal has also changed since then. Back in 1999, a gallon of gas, I think, was around 91 cents a gallon. Today, we're at $3 per gallon. You're trying to take $70 on average away a week from each one of these unemployed workers, and that's going to qualify them for food stamps. They're below the line. Now we're going to have to, and we have seen no fiscal on that. What are the people that never have been on unemployment before and now are going to have to apply for food stamps? What's that fiscal for that? What's that going to cost the taxpayer? There's stats that show unequivocally that in times of these benefit cuts, times of recession, that parents, they buy less medicine for their children. They buy less supplies for them for school. They have to turn off and have turned off utilities. And, I mean, right now you've got these unemployed workers out there, still almost 300,000 workers out there, and they're desperately hurting. You take that much more, you're going to throw them out on the streets, and I don't know how that's productive.
Oh, Kevin Brenninger, you've called this a lose-lose proposition. Explain that.
Well, I mean, to be in a situation where, you know, from 1999 to today, our unemployment rate gone from 4.5% to, for a while, over 10%, that's not good for the workers of the state. That's not good for employers because it shows that demand for their goods and services has gone down. The trust fund went from having a surplus to a significant deficit that, because of the requirements of the federal government, because ultimately this is a federal program, has to be paid back. There's going to be pain somewhere along here, and what Representative Leonard has come up with is shared pain. We still believe that even though we've smoothed out those payments and that pain over a longer period of time in Representative Leonard's bill than the original 1379, the jump that he just described is going to be difficult for many employers to absorb, and it will cause some additional layoffs and economics. So it is a lose-lose all around. It's a bad situation, and the question is how best to deal with it and how best to share and spread out that pain so that it's not a critical blow to any one segment.
Nancy Guy, you've said that this troubles you for a lot of reasons. One thing, of course, is the way that this proposed change would be calculated. Instead of being over the best three-month period of the preceding year, it would be basically wages for the preceding year, which affects those who have been laid off potentially or who have hourly jobs. And you say, and you can elaborate here, people would be reluctant to take family leave, take advantage of the Family Leave Act and other sorts of things. How dangerous do you see this from your perspective?
Well, I think it's very dangerous. In essence, the new calculation method ignores the original purpose of unemployment insurance, which is to replace lost wages with dignity and dispatch. And it does that by calculating or incorporating into the calculation a period of lost wages as part of your wage cycle. So if you're laid off for a few weeks or if you take family medical leave and are laid off again in the next year, your income is going to, your benefit's going to be lower because of your period of not working. It's kind of turns the point of the system on its head, which is to keep dollars flowing both into that family's microeconomy so that they can pay their mortgage, pay their rent, get the groceries and put enough gas in the car to find another job, and also into the macro economy, which is dependent on those consumer dollars in order to sustain itself.
How about those workers, though, that were seasonal workers? They knew that they would have extended periods of time where they wouldn't be working or where they work for factories that have designated periods for retooling. Why should their benefits be calculated on time when they knew that they wouldn't be there anyway?
Well, I think, and to a large extent, I would quarrel whether there is a seasonal sort of worker who knows he's not going to be working. I know folks who are my age in the construction industry, which is the, you know, primary example that people like to use, who've never been laid off a day in their life until this downturn happened. I just think that's a misnomer.
If I could offer another perspective, the economic impact of this bill is, let's just take Marion County. The loss that Marion County will experience because of the changes that are being made in this bill will amount to an annual economic loss of $300 million. That if you want to take $38,000 as the annual average wage, that's going to translate for Marion County into a loss of approximately 8,000 jobs. If you want to go back to my home county, St. Joseph County, you're looking at an annual economic impact loss of about $93 million, which translates to about an additional 2,400 jobs lost. And those are real numbers, too.
Let me get a response to that. Kevin Brenninger, I know that those who support this have suggested that this is actually going to be economically beneficial because businesses are more inclined to hire.
Well, yeah, the more you tax them, which is, and there's a tax increase even in this version, not as great as what would have been the case if we just let 1379 go into effect and require them to pay the interest back to the federal government as an additional bill on that. So there would have been employment impacted and lost and wages that couldn't have been added to with the original legislation. So we think on the whole this is a better, more balanced approach. This will, as Dan said, it took us 10 years to get into this. His bill envisions that we will pay off that debt, get the trust fund back on solid footing over an extended period of time of perhaps roughly 10 years as well, based on the current projections. And we think that that is a more prudent way to go. We're not happy, you understand, about the tax increases that are in this bill. But and it's like I said earlier, it is a lose-lose situation. It's not good for anyone, but we have to make the best of the bad situation.
Well, you all mentioned it took 10 years to get into this situation, and I guess we won't solve it then in 20 minutes or so. So I appreciate the attempt, at least we've made it at it over that period of time. I appreciate your input. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Dan Leonard of Huntington, Democratic Representative David Nizgotsky of South Bend, Kevin Brenninger, President of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce, and Nancy Guyot, President of the Indiana State AFL-CIO. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, Hoosier Hospitality runs headlong into the push for immigration reform. To join the discussion or pose a question for our guests, visit the Indiana Lawmakers discussion on the WFYI Facebook page. Each week, I'll select one of your questions for our panel of experts. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight. Well, Ed, you know, one of the reasons for the delay in the implementation of the 2009 legislation was that there might be a chance that the federal government would bail out Indiana and the other 30 states, I think it is, that have borrowed money to cover unemployment insurance payments. Any chance that the federal government might come to the rescue here?
Not after last November. We had an election. We elected essentially a new Congress. And there's no way that they would tolerate adding to the federal deficit, and this is what that would do.
So the 31 states that have borrowed money, they're on their own, hence Indiana's action on House Bill 1450. It seems to be moving very quickly already now over to the Senate for consideration. Why does this bill seem to be on rails?
This bill is really moving for a couple of different reasons. One of them is that we understand that they have to have everything done as quickly as possible in order to get these taxes online for the first quarter. You know, you heard Representative Leonard say that the 1379 schedules will have actually taken effect again. We need to negate that through this new bill if we're to go ahead and follow the rubric for the next few years. So they want to make sure that gets done in time for the first quarter taxes. And then the other thing is there's still some concern about political shenanigans in the House and whether the Democrats might do something over some other bills, and this is important enough They want to get this thing through as quickly as possible so that it's not affected by anything else.
Well, it came out of the Republican-controlled House. It's going to the Republican-controlled Senate and then on, presumably, to the Republican governor's desk. Will the end product be similar or identical, perhaps, to what we've seen to this point?
Probably. I don't think that you're really going to see much, if any, changes in the Senate. But there's also the prospect that something else may happen on a complementary basis in either the House or the Senate. Senator Karen Tallien is carrying a bonding bill that would help kind of eliminate or negate some of the effect of the federal unemployment tax increase. And there's a similar bill in the House that's being carried by Representative Bill Friend that would do the same thing. We may see one of those bills passed that would also add to what we've got in 1450 and lessen some of the effects going forward on business.
The idea being that it's money is cheap right now, pay off the federal obligation now, issue bonds that then could be paid back at a later time.
Absolutely. This would be the perfect time to do something like that, and you also wouldn't get in the way of what's in 1450, and it would be an advantage for Hoosier businesses as well.
Very good, Ed. We'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for your insight.
For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Lawmakers under News. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis. Take care.
Happens when bright ideas meet world-class infrastructure.
You can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.